Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2. Chapter is entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. The last class was given on text 49. Text 50 through 54 have no purport. So today we'll give a class on text 55. And after we go to the Sanskrit and the translation of the purport. Actually, what I'll do is I'll just read the translations of these previous verses before we do the Sanskrit for today's verse. There was once a hunter who lured birds with food and captured them after spreading the net. He lived as if appointed by death personified as the killer of the birds. Purport. This is another incident from the histories. Actually, there is a pastime in the 11th canto where Krishna instructs Uddhava that's very similar to this little story. While wandering in the forest, the hunter saw a pair of Kalinga birds. Of the two, the female was captivated by the hunter's lure. O queen of Sujagya, the male Kalinga bird, seeing his wife put into the greatest danger in the grip of providence, became very unhappy. Because of affection, the poor bird, being unable to release her, began to lament for his wife. Alas, how merciless is providence. My wife, unable to be helped by anyone, is in such an awkward position and lamenting for me. What will providence gain by taking away this poor bird? What will be the profit? If unkind providence takes away my wife, who is half my body, why should he not take me also? What is the use of my living with half of my body, bereaved by the loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? Okay, today's verse. Katam pujata paksham tan. Mitri hinan bibarmyaham. Matri hinam bibarmyaham. Manda bhagya pratikshante. Nite me mataram praja. Translation purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The unfortunate baby birds, bereft of their mother, are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They are still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them? Please repeat. The unfortunate baby purport. The bird is lamenting for the mother of his children because the mother naturally maintains and cares for the children. Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for in wandering in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. The real fact is that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead protects one, even though one may be motherless and fatherless, one can be maintained by the goodwill of the Lord. Otherwise, if the Supreme Lord does not give one protection, one must suffer in spite of the presence of his father and mother. Another example is that sometimes a patient dies in spite of a good physician and good medicine. Thus, without the protection of the Lord, one cannot live with or without parents. Another point in this verse is that fathers and mothers have protective feelings for their children, even in bird and beast society, not to speak of human society. Kali Yuga, however, is so degraded that a father and mother even kill their children in the womb on the plea of their scientific knowledge that within the womb the child has no life. Prestigious medical practitioners give this opinion, and therefore the father and mother of this day kill their children within the womb. How degraded human society has become. Their scientific knowledge is so advanced that they think that within the egg and embryo there is no life. Now these so-called scientists are receiving Nobel Prizes for advancing the theory of chemical evolution. But if chemical combinations are the source of life, why don't the scientists manufacture something like an egg through chemistry and put it in an incubator so that a chicken will come out? What is their answer? With their scientific knowledge, they are unable to create even an egg. Such scientists are described in Bhagavad Gita as Mayaya Pritagyana, fools whose knowledge has been taken away. They are not men of knowledge, but they pose as scientists and philosophers, although their so-called theoretical knowledge cannot produce practical results. The unfortunate baby birds, bereft of their mother, are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They are still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them? Just before class, one devotee came up to me and asked if I could tell a little bit about the transcendental departure of my good friend Nirguna Prabhu. So I'm a little torn between what I prepared to speak upon and this transcendental pastime. Actually, either would do, because they're both fitting for the verse of purport. So maybe I'll do a combination of the two. When we read Shastra, I found it to be very enlivening to do it from the standpoint of applying Shastric principles within our own lives, just to see how they fit. And this also involves an honest evaluation of our realizations and our position in Krishna consciousness. So within Prabhupada's purport, there are two very obvious personal applications. And the first one has to do with protection. There's 10 subject matters that are delineated in the first, that are presented in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're delineated in the first part of the second canto. So Poshanam, how the Lord protects His devotees, is one of them. Now this protection comes on many levels. Here there's a description of protection on the bodily level, and certainly devotees also experience this. Once on a Christmas marathon, I had a very unique methodology for distributing Prabhupada's books. We just finished the marathon here in the Chopati. I just flabbergasted with the results, and they just keep coming in. Day after day, there's these enormous numbers of books being reported. This was, was in 1978. And there's some little hint of Christmas in India. But in America, it's like a full-on, headlong dive into the material energy, the way they celebrate it. And Santa Claus is plastered all over the media and on the stores and the billboards. So this Christmas marathon, I had a Santa suit on, or at least the top part of it. I had a beard and a hat and the rosy cheeks, and the wire-rim glasses. And but I was behind the seat of a Ford van. Actually, it's a Dodge van. Saffron Dodge van. Those are my brahmachari days. And I had a stack of records between the two front seats. And I would drive into parking lots and stick my head out the window and wave, ho, ho, ho. And it would just really daze people. And then I'd go up and I'd sell them a record, give a donation, and I'd give them a book. This was the methodology that we had at the time. So I would have to be very, I really felt a need to be in touch with Super Soul, because the way I would do this is we would drive into parking lots of shopping centers, big malls. They haven't really started to develop so much in India, but there would be acres and acres of parking lots around these big malls. So I would drive around and I would depend on Super Soul to prompt me to get out of the lot before the police would show up. So oftentimes it would be a game of cat and mouse to not get arrested. And oftentimes I'd have to drive very quickly between venues. So once while driving, this is in the, I was in the northern part of the United States where the roads were covered with snow and ice. And I went into this unbelievable spin. I spun around about three times and it was going very fast. I was going about 120 or 130 kilometers an hour, which isn't very fast on the American highways. And I just started chanting like crazy because I thought, this is it. and then somehow or other, I just, the rear bumper slid into this embankment on a bridge. It was actually on a bridge. Very easily could have gone over, and that was it. You know, that was the end of the thrill ride. And Krishna had protected my gross body. I took shelter. That was the only thing I could really do. It was just completely out of control. Anyway, that pastime popped into mind. Nirguna Prabhu and I were Sankirtan partners for 17 years. So we got to know each other very well. Prabhupada, in many occasions, said that if we simply dedicate our lives to pushing on this Krishna consciousness movement, at the end, even if we're not fully perfect in our Krishna consciousness, fully purified, then Lord Chaitanya will come and drag us back to Godhead. So Nirguna epitomized that. He was a very, very simple devotee, a book distributor for 32 years. Very, very dedicated. Through thick and thin, he had tremendous utsaha. Sometimes we would go with a group of devotees to a Sankirtan spot. And at the end of the day, we would be driving back to the temple. And everybody else was just exhausted. And we would stop at a petrol station to fuel up. And everyone else was just maybe chanting some rounds or learning some shlokas. And he would jump out of the van and start trying to sell books to the attendants at the gas station, go into the office, try and sell to the owner, and sell to the other cars lined up to get gas. Just unbridled enthusiasm. So he clearly gave his life completely to pushing Prabhupada's movement in. And so that the end, Prabhupada made all the arrangements. So this poshanam functions on a level that goes beyond the bodily conception. In the beginning of the sixth canto, in an introduction to the first chapter, Srila Prabhupada describes how this canto presents the subject matter of poshanam. Of course, in the sixth canto, we have the pastimes of Ajamil. And we also have the pastimes of Vitrasura and Chitraketu. So with Ajamil, there was a protection that came in the form, of course, as we know, in his youth, he was a strict Brahmin, but then he became contaminated by association and fell from his position, stopped his sadhana practices. But then at the end of his life, the Lord came to him in the holy name, and he was protected. And then with the Chitraketu, as we know, a very advanced Vaishnav, but then he was cursed. But then, as a result of that curse, he took birth as demon Vitrasura. But that very advanced consciousness stayed with him in that manifest. So this is one way of the protection comes. So in terms of personally applying Shastra, oftentimes it's helpful if we dismantle the mechanism with which we're ensnared within the material energy. So fear is, there's four salient characteristics of the conditioned soul that he shares with animals. And that's he eats, he sleeps, he mates, and defends. So Srila Prabhupada describes that of those four, defending or fearing is the most prominent because it's all-pervasive. The other animal propensities are connected. Like one is in anxiety about where the next meal is coming from, depending upon one's financial position. Or one is worried that he's going to lose his wife or some other man. So then many wars are started over a marital dispute, right? You know, someone's trying to take his wife. Or was it Cleopatra? You know, she was the cause of a big war. other examples, I'm sure, in history like that. And sleeping, you know, I don't get enough sleep. Then there's anxiety. Where will I have a... So this anxiety and fear is pretty much all pervasive in conditioned life. So where does it come from? Where does it originally come from? And there's a description. This is actually one of Nirguna Prabhu's favorite verses from the 11th canto. Bayam duti yabini veshatashad ishari pitasha viparyo shmiti. Tanaya yato uda abhijetan bhaktiai kayesham guru deva tatma. So, fear arises when the living entity misidentifies himself with his body. And this takes place due to the illusory energy of the Lord. And there's a viparyayo smriti. He forgets one's relationship. So he turns away from the Lord, ishad apitasha. He turns away from the Lord, and then there's a role reversal, viparyayo smriti. He forgets his constitutional position, and he thinks he's the Lord. So in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this point is underscored by the famous Icha Dvesha Samutvena Dvandvo Mohena Bharata Sarvabhutani Samoham Sargayanti Parantapa. So the living entity comes into this world, he takes birth, and he's overwhelmed, overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. So what is it that he hates? Well, who is it that he hates? And what is this desire all about? Well, the originally, it's an envy or hatred of Krishna. Krishna is the cynosure of everyone's love and affection. So the bewildered soul, in his plummeting into the material energy, he somehow or other wants to be that, in that position. And so then there's this concomitant desire to be and also envy of the Lord. So then this causes the jiva to fall into the material energy. That's the primal cause. And so these icha and dveshas, they follow the living entity in his sojourn birth after birth in the material world. And so then sometimes it's directed at other living entities. But originally it's of Krishna. So one misidentifies the body as himself. And this is actually the source of, or the cause of fear. So we're seeing this with the this bird whose wife is caught in the net. And so all of this lamentation, fear, and anxiety is produced simply by this misidentification. Mundane psychologists have analyzed fear, and they, I was reading once that they did a survey on what people fear the most. Well, we would think that it would be fear of death. That's primarily, according to this survey, it was the most pronounced fear that people have in the modern world is the fear of public speaking. Right? So, again, this is the bodily conception. One is wants to be something that he's not. He wants to be such a great person. Really, the illusion, you know, the body, how we have it, the material energy, it comes about as a result of this these primal psychological motivating forces of icha and dvesha. So the living entity wants to be Krishna. He wants to be, you know, he's envious of Krishna. So then Krishna gives him what he wants. He has the facility to have his little Goloka Vrindavan. He has his Radharani. And his, you know, he can covert with Srimati Radharani, this illusory Radharani. He can play act. It's like a little child that the mother's cooking at the stove. And my sons used to be like this. And she was cooking. And they would pull at their mother's sari. Mommy, mommy, I want to cook. And they create so much disturbance and the mother can't even cook. So then the intelligent mother goes to the store and buys a toy stove with toy pots and pans, gives it to the child, and the child is distracted and allowed to fulfill his desires. And the mother can go on peacefully with her cooking business. So this analogy, of course, is what happened with us, how we came into the material world. We got a little toy stoves to play with. We can act out this illusion of being the Ishvara and the enjoyer. So as we become purified in Krishna consciousness, we move from this position of being of the understanding that we're the center of the universe. Gradually, we get over to the position where we see ourselves as simply servants at the lotus feet of the Lord. And so in between, there's a lot of purification that goes on. So then how to go about, this is the how-to personal application, how to go about overcoming this fear. Now, Jiva Goswami makes a comment regarding this Sarvadharman Parikshab Jaramamikram Shamanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarvapapivyo Mokshe Yishami Masuchaha. So here Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and simply surrender unto me. I shall protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So this Jiva Goswami says that devotees become free from fear by meditating on this promise of the Lord that I'll free you from all sinful reactions. What are the sinful reactions? Are the source of suffering? So then, intelligently, one could just say, well, but I'm a devotee. And I suffer all the time. You know, I've got an infection on my thumb. You know, my mind's disturbed. You know, so many problems. So, is Krishna protecting me? So, this enters into the whole area of kleshagni, which is the first characteristic of pure devotional service. And it requires a deep understanding, you know, to really not be fearful when, through the material energy, you know, we go through some distresses, some challenge, maybe some life-threatening disease or terminal disease. You know, how to be fearless in these kind of circumstances. So then there's another whole level of protection that we have to understand. And kind of the Mahavakyam for dealing with fearful or distressful circumstances is in the prayers of Lord Brahma after the Brahma Vimohan Lila. And Prabhupada on page 92 paraphrases of the Nectar Devotion paraphrases 10.14.8 of the Bhagavatam and says this should be the guiding principle for all devotees. So this is the famous Tattenu Kampam Shukshamikshamano Bunjani Vatma Kritam Vipakam. Ridvag Vapabir Vidadan Namaste Jiveta Yo Mukti Pade Siddhaya Bak. So one who is always seeking your compassion and who thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds. And he goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, and he becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. So it's actually, in the Acharyas describe here, first of all, that this should be the mentality of the devotee. And then there's a description of, this is the first chapter that was translated after Prabhupada left. And there's a description of how the laws of karma work in the world. People commit sinful activity, and then they suffer. And the suffering is specifically meted out by the material energy in such a way that it inhibits the jiva from committing the same sin again. There's one example in my life. I had a friend in high school whose father was completely addicted to smoking cigarettes. And he developed cancer of the larynx. This is the voice box within which the vocal cords are situated. And so the typical surgical procedure to deal with cancer of the larynx is they cut the larynx out, and they leave a little hole right here in the neck. So the person has to learn how to speak over again because his vocal cords have been removed. So the way they speak, such a person after having gone through such a surgery, is they belch and they formulate words with their mouth. You know, from the belching vibration. So it's a real hideous sound vibration. And so my friend's father was in that situation. But he was very defiant of the material energy, and he continued to smoke. Matter of fact, sometimes he would take the cigarette and put it to the hole in his neck and smoke. He just wouldn't give up. Now, Balavanta and I were having a discussion and taking prasadam together in the guest house. And one of the typical cases that he has as a lawyer are people that are fighting, trying to get some money for damages as a result of smoking cigarettes. He fights the tobacco companies. And these tobacco companies in the United States, they add chemicals to the tobacco to make it even more addictive than it is, and they develop strains of tobacco that contain more nicotine to increase the level of addiction. It's a very insidious business. But anyway, the way this man left his body was he started bleeding from this hole. The cancer ate into his aorta, one of the main arteries, and his blood was gushing from the hole. Got all over the car on the way to the hospital. So we're going to understand, that this is very harsh rectification for that sin of smoking, of taking intoxication. And more than likely in his next body, of course, probably wouldn't be a human form, but when he gets around the human form, he'd probably be less inclined to smoke because of the very deep samskara embedded in his subtle body. So then the acharyas make the comment that karmani nirdahati kintu tra bhakti bhajan, that when one takes up devotional service, that he's no longer under the laws of karma, that the karmic effect on the devotee is no longer there. So then what is it? Then why do devotees suffer? So then the Acharyas make the point that there's an analogy, actually they cite from the fourth canto, of how the son has complete faith in his father that he's acting in his best interest. This is the nature of the relationship of father and son. So sometimes the father will chastise the son because of misbehavior to correct him, put him on the right track. And sometimes he'll embrace him and give him a ladu because he's been a good boy. And so the son has faith that the father is acting in his best interest, whether he's chastising him or reciprocating in a positive way, because he's his father. He knows that he loves him and he cares for him. So similarly, the devotee understands that these trials and tribulations or these material blessings are sent by Krishna for his purification. He doesn't have any doubt about it. So therefore he can be fearless in these circumstances, because he can just see this is actually Krishna's blessing. He's sending this to purify me. And the Acharyas describe how actually it's not karma, but there's still vestiges of the enjoying spirit in the heart of the devotee. So Krishna will send a distress which is similar to what it would be if you were under the law of karma, to free him of this tendency within the heart to enjoy. So when the devotee understands that, he takes it as a great happiness. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that any suffering that I experience in the course of my rendering service to the Lord, I accept with great happiness, because I know that I'm becoming purified. And Queen Kunti, she prayed, Vipada Shantuta Shashvat, Tatra Tatra Jagadguru, Bhavato Darshanam Yacha, Apana Bhavadarshanam. So please send me suffering again and again, because when the suffering comes, then you come to us, Krishna. You help us. And when you help us, when we see you, then we no longer see repeated birth and death. So this is the heart of the devotee. And so how he can be free from this fear or anxiety when the distress comes. About ready to have surgery at the Bhaktivinoda Hospital, and I was having a discussion kind of along these lines with Vaishnava Seva, and he's the devotee who's going to perform the surgery. And he was just saying, how devotees, they don't really see this, the need for surgery as a problem. They see it as a blessing. It's not like coming from bad karma, it's just Krishna helping us gain more realizations of our relationship with him and increasing our sincerity. Just like in the 11th canto, 5th chapter, right after the famous Krishna Varnam Tosha Krishnam Sango Pangashta Parshadam verse, there's a description of how the sages in Satya Yuga worship Kali Yuga because the Yuga Dharma is so powerful that one comes to the highest level of Krishna consciousness by performing it. And there's a description that follows that of the hellish conditions in Kali Yuga and how people are forced by their suffering to take deep shelter in the holy name. They're in such a pathetic and helpless condition and they're forced to take shelter of the name very deeply. How else can we cry for a baby like its mother as we chant, unless there's these circumstances where we take shelter, forced to take shelter? So Nirguna Prabhu, he was in that type of situation. About a month and a half before his departure, he became paralyzed from the solar plexus down. And with that paralysis came excruciating pain in his legs and feet. And we discovered that if he received vigorous massage while the pain came, then somehow it would be reduced. Krishna is known as a personality that accomplished many things with one act. So Nirguna got the pain, which pushed him deeper into his chanting, deeper into his surrender to Krishna. And the devotees in Mayapur got the facility, which is one of the five most potent angas of bhakti, to perform Vaishnava Seva. So we arranged 24/7 volunteers to massage Nirguna's legs and feet. My son Prahlad was one. Gaur Krishna Prabhu was by his side for Nirguna Prabhu's side for 4.5 months, constantly serving him. And what devotees experienced, at one new brahmachari, he'd been a devotee maybe 5 years or so, and he said when he was massaging his feet, he felt this intense shakti coming from his feet. And the next day, he chanted the best rounds he'd ever chanted in his entire devotional career. So there were many reports like this where Krishna Prabhu said it was just phenomenal how he just kind of take a step out of, you know, being the center of his universe and serve another person. And so Nirguna went deeper and deeper. His body, you know, like the last month, he wasn't able to eat. And had little liquids. So he already had a very small body, about maybe 50 kgs. But at the end, what was it? It got down to maybe 20, 25. Had just like skin stretched over his bones. But he was very, very determined, right up to the very end, he was chanting his japa. And it was actually at the and Radhakund's appearance. Let me back up a little bit. He told one devotee that he had had a vision, that he had some kind of understanding that he might be a Manjari, that this was his swarup, but he wasn't sure of it. And then this began a dialogue between Harisari Prabhu and himself, that he wasn't sure, but he was somehow or other within this vision, he was expecting an invitation to resume his eternal position in his relationship with Krishna. So Harisari Prabhu from time to time would ask him if he got received his invitation. Harisari Prabhu was regularly reading from his unpublished diary, and he didn't know Nirguna before, and their relationship developed, actually a very deep relationship developed in about a 2 month period when Nirguna's condition really worsened, and he realized that he wasn't going to continue. He tried very hard for the first 2.5 months after he came to India to heal himself. We were doing alternative therapies. But because he wanted to preach, he was a really determined preacher, wanted to go back to the preaching field. So then, on Radhakund's appearance day, at about 9 o'clock, 9 p.m., actually it was 9:15, I looked at my watch, as I'd just been talking with Jayapataka Swami on the phone, and Nirguna had been having conversations with Indradyumna Swami, also Radhana Swami, different sannyasis that he had, Vidyananda Maharaj, different sannyasis that he had relationship with. And so I'd just been talking with Jayapataka Swami, and he'd served as a temple president under Jayapataka Swami for quite a few years when he was temple president of the Murari Farm in Tennessee. So I went to Nagona and said, I can connect you with Jayapataka Swami now. And Nagona pushed me away. I was confused, because usually they're really eager. And then Grahila Prabhu, the Prabhupada disciple, who was an indexer for the BBT for many years in Los Angeles, and had been living in Mayapur for several years. He was at that time massaging Nirguna's feet. And went to him and said, "What's going on with Nirguna?" And Grahila said, "I have a real strong sense that Nirguna is about to leave his body." So I went to Avnish Prabhu, who many of you, I think, know. He's doing his graduate work in palliative care, working with the Bhaktivedanta Hospital to go into the service of hospice care. And he'd already had experience, quite a bit of experience with this. So I went to get him, and he examined Nirguna, and he said, "Yes, you know, he's entering the active dying stage. He's going to be leaving within a few minutes or a few hours." And shortly after he examined him, then we revved up to Kirtan, and I called Harisari and Pankajangri and Jananivas, asked them to come back. So we had Kirtan going all night, and he had negligible blood pressure, no pulse, couldn't perceive a pulse, but he was still breathing. He had like 2.5 to 3.5 breaths a minute. And then after Mangal Arati, I made an announcement and asked all the devotees to come. That Nirguna Prabhu had lost consciousness and wouldn't regain it. This is what the understanding that I got from Avnish. And so shortly, we had placed Nirguna in one of the MIHET classrooms, Mayapur Institute for Higher Education and Training classrooms. That's been my service for many years in Mayapur, to facilitate, devotees coming and having kirtans there. And we had like amazing kirtans, going on for a month. And so the classroom just completely filled up. And then kirtan went like to more and more ecstatic pitches, just an unbelievably intense atmosphere. And then Bhakti Vishwamba Madhava Swami was sitting right next to me near on the side of Nirguna's bed. And he grabbed my arm and he said, "Jamastami, look. Look, Nirguna's tongue is moving." And sure enough, it was. You could see that his tongue was vibrating the mantra along with the kirtan. And then it became more pronounced. And then, shortly, his eyes opened. And then he started smiling. And then he put his hands up in the air and started chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." It just completely flabbergasted everybody that he had done that, because I had announced, they come, he can still hear, but he won't regain consciousness. So then he was conscious for about 3 hours. I immediately called Radhana Swami and asked him if he could speak with Nirguna Prabhu, which he did for about 40 minutes. I sometimes with his cell phones you lose a connection, so at one point I picked it up and just was to make sure that it was heard. And Radhana Swami would say, "No, just focus your consciousness on Krishna." We had these photographs, BBT plates, posters on the ceiling over Nirguna's bed. And then another time I picked up the earphone and right in the center was just chanting Japa. And then I knew he was coming for the yatra to Mayapur soon. So I picked up and asked him, and I said, Maharaj, I think you may need to go now. And he said, yes, I'm a little late to leave for the airport. So then we had played the first photo or picture that Nirguna had ever seen of Krishna was of Krishna lifting Govardhan. So this his relationship with Govardhan was very special. So devotees had placed the Govardhan Shila in his hand. And then he always kept it in his hand. And, you know, we made sure that it was very securely in his hand at all times. So then, and to hear Nirguna, he was so weak that he could just whisper. So Harisari heard Nirguna say, get the peace and go. And he said it very, very with a strong voice. It wasn't like it was the usual whisper. And this was in the last 3 hours. So then Harisari Prabhu said to Nirguna, what was that? And Nirguna again said in a very audible voice, get the peace and go. So Harisari said, what are you talking about? And did someone say something to you? Did you get your invitation? Nirguna nodded. And so who said something to you? And Nirguna said, Giriraj. And so then, what's the peace? What are you talking about? Nirguna Prabhu said, Giriraj. So, referring to Govardhan Shila. So Giriraj had told them to get the peace and go. And the peace was Giriraj. So then, and then he lost consciousness. And Karma Prabhu, who's famous as a cook, he'd come to Mayapur maybe 3 or 4 days before. And he's known for his cooking. And I didn't know he was a kirtan leader, but my gosh. He led this kirtan, went on for 7 hours up to the time where Nirguna actually departed. So Nirguna came to consciousness maybe around 6:30. And he lost consciousness again around 9:30, 10 o'clock. So for 7 hours, Karma was chanting. And, you know, it was just so intense. The atmosphere was so surcharged with the internal energy of the Lord. And devotees were just, I was looking around the room. Devotees didn't even know him. They were crying, you know, so intensely to the holy name. And then, when Nirguna left, the devotees were just cheering. Jai Nirguna Prabhu Ki Jai Nirguna Ki Jai. You know, it was just such an ecstatic victory. And it was very clear in everyone's mind that Nirguna had gone back to Godhead. It was just so powerful. So then afterwards, devotees were preparing his body for cremation. This is, he left his body at 1:22 in the afternoon. So they were preparing his body, and we'd already arranged for new dhoti and dhoti top. And it was extremely unusual because no one could find the Govardhan Shila that he had in his hand. It was nowhere to be found. It wasn't like the room was cluttered. There were a lot of devotees in the room. It just wasn't anywhere to be found. So then, a couple hours after his departure, because I was a very close friend of his, devotees asked me to... This is actually the first time I'd been through this. I'd never been with someone that was in the active dying process. Of course, we're all dying. But, you know, I'd never been through this. And he was my very close friend. So I was asked to offer artik to his body. We put him in a chair. And a very intense experience for me. I wasn't sad, really. But still, as I was offering artik to his body, I was just so touched by the experience somehow or other. And it was just tears were just streaming down my cheeks. And then the devotees carried Nirguna out, put him on a palanquin outside, and then we carried him in procession. We went around to Samadhi three times. And again, you know, it's still just tears are coming to my eyes. You know, it was just a kind of a natural thing. And then when we took him by boat, because there was still some flooding, we took him by boat to a place where devotees have usually been cremated, their bodies. And then we went through this whole process. And after that, it was like just such a natural, normal kind of transition. You know, just, and all of the kind of the tears that just went away. You know, his body was placed on the funeral pyre, and the fire burnt through his legs, and actually 1 foot dropped off. And this Bengali devotee that arranges the cremation every time, he took that foot and just threw it up on the top of the fire, like it was like a log that had fallen off. And he did the same thing with the other foot. But it just completely detached, you know, myself from any kind of bodily conception of doing it. But it's just a very, very powerful experience. And devotees afterwards, they felt like the whole community had been pulled together. Matter of fact, when I got back to Mayapur, I'd been teaching in Vrindavan. And, you know, we realized all of the caregivers were just completely exhausted and sick. When Mataji, she's a nurse, she was hospitalized. She's just completely exhausted. And we realized we needed to really get something going. So I called, I think I spoke with Gauranga Priya about it, you know, and asked if the Tripathi Temple could send some brahmacharis to care for him. I also called Radhisham in Pune. And there was some reluctance, and, you know, because they were very busy. And I found out later when I was talking to Radha Swami, he told them, better that they arrange it themselves, because it will really help the community tremendously. He told me this after the fact. Because when there was some delay, and there was just, you know, he was in this heavy pain, you know, and then we just had to work super hard. It was like, I found it to be the equivalent of about 5 Gorpanim festivals, just trying to organize. You know, a lot of times we have like 35, 40 courses going simultaneously during the festival time, and it's like a complete like material burnout just to try and make all the arrangements. But doing this, you know, to arrange for his care round the clock was very, very difficult. Because it's caring for a person in that stage, very taxing. And so there were many devotees, they would do it for a while and they'd get so exhausted. And it wasn't like a light massage. One had to do it very vigorously, even in his sleep. If he wasn't massaged, even in his sleep, he'd wake up in this heavy pain. So anyway, I could go on for a couple more hours. I'm already past the time limit, I think. And I didn't really cover my Pitta Jnana. But I guess I can just summarize very quickly. The same kind of illusion that creates the toy stove in the attempt to cook, or the play actors Krishna and Radharani, and that same kind of illusion affects the thinking process. So the Maya Pritagyanas because they're not surrendered to Krishna, because they're envious of them, then they get off facility in that regard. So these crazy, you know, Big Bang theories and chemical evolution and this and that, you know, it's just part of the facility that Krishna gives. Sarvasya taham hari sannivisto mata smitir ganam apohanam cha. Krishna gives forgetfulness, provides the facility to forget him, and also gives them remembrance. So bhakti is comprised of samvit and ladini shakti. So samvit is this knowledge. So I was reading one of the acharyas, I think it was Jiva Goswami, made the point that samvit in touch with the modes of material nature creates this illusion. Naham prakasha sarvasha yoga maya samavitaha. So those fools, they can't really understand Krishna. And they're thinking they can through the Aroha Panta, this path. There's in the Vedic tradition, there's three prominent pramanas, pramans. Pratyaksha Anuman. This is under the kind of the general category of Aroha Panta, which is the ascending process. Pratyaksha is sensory perception. This is to the scientists, they make observation. And then Anuman, they, through argument and logic and reason, they come to an understanding. So this is how they come up with all their theories, Darwinianism, what have you. And then there's the Avaroha Panta. Ava is the preface in avatar. Right? So this is the descending knowledge. Jiva Goswami comments in the 13th chapter, this is the Brahma Vimoha Lila, that unless one can accommodate achincha in the Supreme, this feature of achincha in the Supreme, one cannot, unless one can accept the achincha feature in the Supreme, one cannot accommodate the conception of God. So chincha means argument, reason. Achincha means beyond argument and reason. So the Avaroha Panta is based upon accepting Shastra as it is. If Krishna says, then we accept. And so this reason, this understanding, the knowledge comes through bhakti, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Janaya Yashu Vairagyam, Ganam Chayara Hetukam. So it's by bhakti that we gain knowledge. Nirguna was a pre-medical student before he became a devotee, a very intelligent person, a very good philosopher. So he had very deep understandings of the philosophy that made it very easy for him to pass the final test. And also he had a deep commitment to Srila Prabhupada's mission. He just wanted to go back and preach. But then when he knew that wasn't Krishna's plan, then he surrendered to that. Without any disturbance, just continued with his sadhana. Okay, I'll stop here. Maybe there's some questions or comments. Sorry for going too long. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nirguna Prabhu ki jai, Hari Bol.